coming up.
Niccolo Machiavelli wrote, "If an injury has to be done to a man, it should be so severe that his vengeance need not be feared."
Was Machiavelli an unscrupulous theorist and advisor?
Or one of the most widely misunderstood political philosophers ever?
I have no servants when here in Rome, my lord. Florence can no longer afford them.
Ah, democracy, Signor Machiavelli.
They say it has its merits.
It's good to be king, if just for a while. To be there in velvet, yeah, to give them a smile.
People associate Machiavelli with lies, deception, and manipulation. Was that really what he advocated?
Our guest is Maurizio Veroli, author of Redeeming the Prince, the meaning of Machiavelli's masterpiece.
It's good to be king.
The life and thought of Machiavelli.
Coming up on Philosophy Talk. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the studios of KALW San Francisco.
Continuing conversations that begin at Philosopher's Corner at Stanford University, where Ken and I walk around professing philosophy.
And today, we're talking about the political philosopher, Niccolo Machiavelli.
Machiavelli, Ken, one of the most astute political thinkers ever to have lived. A champion of Republican liberty. A pragmatic visionary.
The guy's dead. You don't have to suck up to him. A pragmatic visionary? Look, one of the, in his book, The Prince, he championed ruthlessness and deception. He said political leaders should do whatever it takes to defeat their enemies, to stay in power. Pragmatic visionary?
Yeah, well, tell me what's wrong with defeating your enemies and staying in power. That's a hallmark of a strong leader. What would you prefer, a doormat? Someone who just gives in, runs away at the first sign of a threat?
Well, I'm all for a strong leadership, but what the trouble is with what Machiavelli thought that called for. He thinks a strong leader is someone who achieves and holds onto power at any cost. At any cost.
Oh, please, Ken, you're not going to trot out that tired old platitude about how he says the ends justify the means, are you? Newsflash, Machiavelli never even said that.
Okay, he may not have said those exact words, but you can't deny that that sums up pretty much Machiavelli's thinking. Look, lies, deceptions, manipulation, cruelty, even torture, all tools that a Machiavellian-hungry power leader feels free to use at his own discretion.
Look, anyone seeking positions of power can be described as power-hungry. What does that mean? Just about every politician and head of state there is or ever has been. Those not interested in power need not apply for the job.
Yeah, but John, you're talking about how things are. I'm talking about the way things should be. I'm talking about the ideal. That's why in the Republic, Plato, one of the great philosophers of all time, said that the philosopher king, only philosopher king should rule, and they should rule because they don't want to rule. They don't want power. They'd rather be off doing philosophy, but for the good of the state, they reluctantly are willing to rule.
Well, yeah, and Plato also thought that philosopher kings should lie and manipulate the common people. For God's sakes, he thought radical censorship and even eugenics were all for the greater good of the citizens. I don't see how you can hold Plato up as some sort of ideal and at the same breath knock Machiavelli. They both think a good leader is going to deceive and manipulate.
Let's set Plato aside. I don't want to have to defend Plato to you, but let's focus on the qualities of a Machiavellian leader. I want to ask you if that's really what we would want in a leader, John.
Whether it's what we would want in the real world, Ken, or in some la-la land you've come up with in your naive little brain.
Naive? What's that supposed to mean?
Well, look, in the real world, we need cunning, pragmatic leaders willing to manipulate people in situations in order to achieve what's best for the state. As Machiavelli said, they need to be part lion, part fox. That's why we have organizations like the CIA. Honesty and transparency in state affairs would lead to unmitigated disaster.
Look, so I grant you, sometimes you might have to lie to your enemies or those who would do us harm. That's one thing. But Machiavellian politicians goes far beyond that. Take someone like Karl Rove. And, you know, there's a guy who's known for his win-at-any-cost scorched earth tactics, and there's a biography about him called Machiavelli's Shadow.
And your point being?
Well, if that's the epitome, if Karl Rove is the epitome of a Machiavellian politician, then I gotta tell you, frankly, I think the world would be better off without that kind of leadership.
Let me ask you, do you think Karl Rove acted in the best interests of our country?
You know, like when he stole that election from Gore? No, I do not.
Well, and sorry to tell you this, buddy, but he's not Machiavellian. I mean, if you want to pick a Republican Machiavellian, pick Dwight Eisenhower, right? He was so good at it, nobody noticed. Machiavelli said he loved his country more than his own soul. You can't get that, just take any ruthless, power-hungry, win-at-any-cost politician and call him Machiavellian. If their actions are not done in the interest of the state, then they're just not Machiavellian.
Yeah, you know, you may have some kind of subtle scholarship on your side, I don't know, but I've got popular culture on my side. And to prove that point, we sent our roving philosophical reporter, Natalie Jones, to examine some self-styled Machiavellians from popular culture right up close. She files this report.
Niccolo Machiavelli has inspired how-to books for business leaders, mafia bosses, and parents. He's inspired a graphic novel and a comic book, and even an MS-DOS video game. You can take a psychology test to assess your level of Machiavellianism, how willing you are to use deception and thievery to advance your own cause. But it's people fascinated by power that really seem to be captivated by Machiavelli.
You know, most of the guys that I know, they read Prince Machiavelli. And I had Carmela go and get the Cliff Notes once, and he's okay.
Tony Soprano preferred The Art of War by Sun Tzu, but other mobsters have taken valuable lessons from the Prince. In the 1993 movie A Bronx Tale, a mafia boss explains Machiavelli to a protege.
Is it better to be loved or feared?
It's a good question. It's nice to be both, but it's very difficult. But if I had my choice, I would rather be feared.
But what might be the most surprising homage to the philosopher is a posthumous album from the rapper Tupac Shakur called The 7-Day Theory, where Tupac takes on the alter ego Machiavelli. Allow me to introduce Machiavelli, the
God's spirit, lyrics like the Holy Quran. Tupac wasn't just a rapper, but he was also a poet, playwright, actor, and as the character Machiavelli, I wanted to imagine himself as not just an artist, but also as a philosopher or educator.
Travis Gosa teaches African-American studies at Cornell University. He spends a couple of days on Tupac every year in a class he teaches on hip-hop. Gosa says while Tupac became known for embracing a thug life ethos, he didn't start out with that message. I hear Brenda's got a baby, but Brenda's barely got a brain. A damn shame, the girl can hardly spell her name. That's not our problem, that's up to Brenda's family.
Well, let me show you how it affects our whole community. Now, Brenda... While he was born on the East Coast, once he became a West Coast artist, he found that very few people were interested in his black power, socially conscious lyrics.
Tupac was a big reader all his life, but it's widely believed he studied Machiavelli seriously when he was in prison in 1995, serving time for sexual assault.
Tupac was intelligent to use a book that is not only a classic philosophical treatise, but a book that many individuals who have been incarcerated may be familiar with.
Tupac was released from prison in late 1995 and recorded The 7-Day Theory the next year. He was shot and killed in Las Vegas in September 1996. The album was released after his death and became a big success, hitting number one on the Billboard charts. The song that maybe most mirrors Machiavelli's teachings is called Blasphemy.
Tupac on this track is asking whether or not it's better to be loved or feared and how to avoid being hated. And he actually comes up with the ideas that, you know, pretty much people are going to hate you no matter what, right? So don't be too concerned with being hated.
And then there's advice for being on your guard. Watch for phonies, keep your
enemies close, watch your homies. Tupac is painting a very dark and grim image of human nature. He believes in many ways that the downfall of a leader, of a ruler, will come from within.
To this day, conspiracy theorists and fans pore over the album and compare notes with Machiavelli's work, for clues about Tupac's death and signs that he might still be alive. For example, Machiavelli wrote about strategically spreading rumors about the deaths of prominent people, and some made the leap to the idea that Tupac faked his own death. It doesn't appear that the actual Tupac will be coming back, but Travis Gosa says we can take some messages from the album.
Tupac Shakur and the use of Machiavelli seem to be trying to signal a rebirth of Tupac. And the death of Tupac signaled a rebirth of Tupac that would be focused on trying to use the music to spread something beyond gangster entertainment.
For Philosophy Talk, I'm Natalie Jones.
Thanks, Natalie. I have to admit, I learned quite a bit about the thought of Tupac, who thought it was better to be feared than loved and got shot. There's a lesson there for all of us, I think. I'm John Perry. With me is my fellow Stanford philosopher, Ken Taylor.
And today, we're thinking about Machiavelli. We're joined now by Maurizio Viroli. He's a emeritus professor of politics from Princeton University. He's currently teaching part-time at the University of Texas at Austin, and he has the distinct pleasure of being a professor of political communication at the University of Italian Switzerland in Lugano. He's author of Redeeming the Prince, The Meaning of Machiavelli's Masterpiece. He comes to us today from Florence, Italy. Maurizio, welcome to Philosophy Talk.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's a great pleasure and a honor to talk about Niccolò, as I call him. Since he's almost now an old friend of mine. I've been studying for about 30 years. It's an enduring love.
30 years, that's a long time. And you're in Florence. I envy you that. Now, as you say, you've been studying Machiavelli for a long time. You just wrote a book about him. So, Maurizio, I mean, how'd you get so interested in Machiavelli? Is he required reading for all Italian philosophy students?
No. I got interested in Machiavelli via Rousseau. When I got my PhD at the European University Institute in Florence, I studied Rousseau, and it so happened that I've noticed that Rousseau was an admirer of Machiavelli, and then therefore I went backward and I started studying Machiavelli in the 80s, and I'm still working on him. I'm fascinated.
So you not only study Machiavelli, you kind of advocate more people studying Machiavelli. Now, there's no shortage of unscrupulous politicians in the world, so is it really a good idea to be promoting the works of Machiavelli?
Should politicians study Machiavelli, Maurizio?
Yes, politicians should study Machiavelli for one main reason, because what Machiavelli tried to teach politicians, unsuccessfully in his own time, was one, you must try to emancipate your country from foreign domination if you are under foreign domination. Second, you must free your republic from tyranny if you are under a tyrant. Third, you must free your country from political corruption. And fourth, you should not aim at power but at glory. That's what Machiavelli taught.
Then he asked
the next question, what does it take to attain glory? And it takes greatness of soul, magnanimity. It takes virtue, it takes courage, it takes wisdom, and it takes a kind of moral preparedness to be prepared to enter in evil, if need be.
Maurizio, your Machiavelli doesn't sound like much like the Machiavelli of popular imagining. He sounds like a radically different character than what most of us think. And we'll have to dig into whether you're right or popular imagining of Machiavelli is right. But we'll get to that after a break. You're listening to Philosophy Talk. Today, we're talking about Machiavelli with Maurizio Viroli, author of Redeeming the Prince, The Meaning of Machiavelli's Masterpiece.
What did Machiavelli really think? We all want leaders who are devoted to the state. Should they be conniving? Should they be ruthless? Is that what Machiavelli was all about, or have we misunderstood him all this time?
Machiavelli, Machiavellianism, and the truth about his great work, The Prince, plus your calls and emails when Philosophy Talk continues.
One way to achieve world domination is to study the work of Niccolò Machiavelli, particularly his book, The Prince. I'm John Perry. This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm Ken Taylor. We're talking about the political philosophy of Niccolo Machiavelli.
Our guest is Maurizio Varoli, longtime professor of politics at Princeton, now emeritus. He's the author of Redeeming the Prince, the meaning of Machiavelli's masterpiece.
So, Maurizio, lots of people think that the Prince is a kind of how-to manual for ruthless leaders. You say that it's a book about, really about political redemption. What makes you think that, and what do you mean it's a book about political redemption?
I mean that if your country is under foreign domination, you need to redeem yourself from foreign domination. That is to say, you must be capable of repelling foreign armies invading you every 2 years.
So, okay, but you know, what's all this stuff about? So, like I said, the common interpretation, it's a how-to manual for rulers in power. Once that got to the... I know Italy at the time was broken up into separate states and not unified and all that. But, I mean, I don't see what the manipulative, deceptive, and all that stuff has to do with political redemption. Connect those two themes for me.
It has because if you are in a war, you might be forced to use fraud or not to keep your words or to change your political alliances unless you want to be defeated. It's not fun to be defeated in a war.
So take Mussolini. Do you think, and set aside the fact that eventually he was defeated, apart from that, would Machiavelli have admired his leadership technique?
Machiavelli would have detested Mussolini for one simple reason that he has explained in the Discourses on Livy, Book 1, Chapter 10, namely that tyrants are the worst possible human beings. They must be despised and destroyed. Mussolini was a tyrant, therefore Machiavelli would not have loved Mussolini at all. In addition, Mussolini was simply an idiot.
So what's the difference? Okay, tell me the difference between a tyrant that Machiavelli would despise and a prince that Machiavelli would admire. What are the characteristics of a prince that make them different from a Mussolini or a Putin or a Stalin?
It's a goal. For Machiavelli, a great prince is someone who is serving the common good of his country. A tyrant is someone who is serving his own interest and the interest of his proteges. What Machiavelli has written about tyranny is eloquent and clear. There are no doubts about it. He was very well aware of the difference, and he has never written a single line in praise of any tyrant of the past or his own times.
So in terms of contemporary, not contemporary, but 20th century political leaders, it sounds like Franklin Roosevelt, who was very much cunning.
Now you're talking senses. That's a leader whom Machiavelli would have admired. Yeah, but there is another leader in our history, I mean American history, because though I was born in Italy, I'm an American citizen, another American leader whom Machiavelli would have loved, and was the old Abraham Lincoln, who was capable of attaining goals of redemption and emancipation. And when it was necessary, when he passed the 13th Amendment to the Constitution, he was very wise at bribing, making promising, a little bit of cheating. Now, who is going to blame Lincoln for having promised jobs, money, making also a little bit of disinformation and misinformation to the Congress if the goal was to have the 13th Amendment to the Constitution passed so that slavery was abolished in the United States?
Well, maybe we should send Obama a copy of The Prince, because many of us like his goals and think he's devoted to the state, but we'd like to see a little more cunning and political effectiveness there.
You're listening to...
Someone like Putin or someone like the terrorist. You really want to keep your promise when you are discussing or you are dealing with leaders of that kind. That's what Machiavelli says. Discourses on Livy, Book 3, Chapter 41. Fraud is always detestable unless you are dealing with enemies who are using fraud. Now, if you are defeated, who is going to praise you? Nobody. That's exactly Machiavelli's message. It's about praise and blame. Just one footnote. I think that Machiavelli was not a philosopher in the proper sense of the term. He was a political writer, a playwright, a historian, and above all, a poet.
Thanks, Maurizio.
You're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're talking about the philosophy of Niccolò Machiavelli. We'd love to have you join this conversation. And Stephen from Columbia, Missouri is on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Stephen.
Hello, sir. I would like to know what piece is from Machiavelli and what is the weighted piece from Machiavelli.
Okay.
Thank you very much, sir.
Maurizio, what is peace for Machiavelli, and what's the way to peace?
That's a marvelous, marvelous question, because for Machiavelli has a very nice poem, it's called The Golden Ass, but it means the animal, don't get me wrong. because sometimes, you know, I am afraid to have the wrong accent. So in any case, it's about an animal. And it's an autobiographical poem. He has this wonderful line that God doesn't want war, that peace is the highest blessing. But he also makes another important reference to the theme of peace in the book called The Art of War, that he wrote in 1521. He says, you must love peace and be capable of fighting a war. Because he knew that if you are defenseless, you are likely to be invaded and conquered. Therefore, if you really want to defend not only your peace, but your liberty, you need a serious army. That's the teaching of Machiavelli. And he was absolutely right.
So, Ken and Maurizio, we've got some email from John in Berkeley. And he says, it seems like an interesting question. He says, Machiavelli seems to want religion to be at the service of political and military needs. Yet at the same time, Machiavelli wants full reverence for religious rights. Are his views on religion a bit inconsistent? Can they be reconciled?
Machiavelli certainly wanted a religion for free peoples. That's what he wanted. He was a severe critic of the kind of Christian religion that he was experiencing in Italy, a religion that was teaching humility, that was teaching the principle that this life is not that important because it's the life, the life that counts. Machiavelli did not want this type of religion. He wanted a religion that would simply say, as he writes in Discourses, Book 2, Chapter 2, that you must love your country. Devi amare la tua patria. And you must be strong in order to defend it. E devi essere forte per poterla difendere. That's what he writes. And I think that, just to close the argument, I think that the kind of the country that is closer to Machiavelli's idea in terms of the relationship between political liberty and religion is a country that we know very well. It's the United States of America.
So we've got another email from Greg Slater, one of our regular listeners. He says, everyone in a position of power agrees that the most disastrous thing a leader can do is level with the people you have power over. I guess that's Greg's opinion. Did Machiavelli agree that lying constantly is the most essential thing about good leadership? Did he really believe in lying to the people?
No, he says exactly the opposite. In the Prince, Chapter 8, to mentire ai cittadini, to betray your citizens, to lie all the time, gives you might, ensure your power, Machiavelli writes, but does not give you glory. And as I stated earlier on, Machiavelli repeats over and over again that the mark of a true leader is to aspire not to power per se, but to glory.
Yeah, so though, Maurizio, I think this is right, that people don't read The Prince closely enough, because it's really important for him that you have a stable state, that the state not be subject to constant revolution and all these things. And you can take these extreme measures, like lying or torture in extreme circumstances. But he's very, 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 very much alive to the cost to the prince of taking these things. And you should always, it seems to me, he believes, prefer the less extreme measure, right? If you can be loved, be loved. If you can't be loved, be feared, but don't be hated. And the things that will be make you be hated is seizing their property and especially their women, right? And don't do that.
Don't do that. No. It's not. It's risky business, and it's useless, and it's counterproductive. The words that Machiavelli uses indicate, if you read the text with some attention, how reluctantly Machiavelli offers the advice that there are some circumstances in which you must be prepared to learn not to be good. That's what he says,
right.
Not to be good. Or enter in evil reluctantly. He has never said anything like, do whatever it takes. And now allow me to make an observation that refers not to Machiavelli's texts, but to Machiavelli's the person, the man. Machiavelli was an impeccable servant of the Republic of Florence. They tried him after he was fired in November 1512. The regime of the Medici, an hostile regime to him, a regime that had put him in prison under the charge of conspiracy. They tried him to verify whether or not he had misused the enormous sums of money that he had available when he was secretary. They found the committee that he was innocent. He couldn't really say my poverty is the proof of my honesty. And yeah. No one has been able to contradict him, not even his enemies. So we are talking of an extremely honest, high rank officer of the Republic who has given advices on how to keep alive a Republic. Doesn't seem to me to be a despicable goal, or am I wrong?
You're listening to Philosophy. We're talking about the philosophy of Niccolò Machiavelli. We'd love to have you join this conversation. And Lauren from Berkeley's on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Lauren.
Thank you very much. My question is the theory that the Prince was written satirically still taken seriously?
Good question. What's the answer to that, Maurizio? Is that...
No. He was extremely serious. Machiavelli was great at writing satires. He wrote a comedy that is really hysterical, Mandragola, I mean. If you read or if you see it performed, it's even better. No, Machiavelli was extremely serious. The idea that the Prince is a satire goes back to the work of an Italian jurist migrated to Oxford in the 16th century and then was refreshed and re-enhanced by Spinoza, Bayle, Diderot, and Rousseau. But they wanted, with that theory, to save Machiavelli from the bad reputation that the prince caused to him. That's so they say the prince is just a satire.
He didn't really mean
it. His job is the serious work is are the discourses on Livy. Well, let's discard and discount the prince. No. But Machiavelli was extremely serious in the prince, and there is no contradiction in my view between the prince and the discourse.
Keith from San Francisco is on the line. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Keith.
Yes, good morning. My question is, under what circumstances can an essentially benevolent and effective leader not be Machiavellian to some degree?
That's a good question. I would think, I'm guessing, Maurizio, that there's no circumstances under which a benevolent leader can fail to be Machiavellian. I think Machiavelli thinks this is what leadership amounts to, but what do you think?
I'm trying to think what is wrong in Machiavelli's advice, and I can for a scrupulous, for a good leader, I can tell you this: Machiavelli, in his advices, in his counsels, in his exhortations, was many times wrong. For instance, when he suggested the Pope Clement VII to arm the peoples of Romagna, or other suggestions on very practical matters that he offered. And when he was wrong, you know what? In what sense he was wrong? He was wrong because he was aiming too high and too difficult tasks. Just consider this. Can a realist political theorist or writer suggest in early 16th century Italy to emancipate Italy from foreign domination. That was unrealistic. Or to emancipate Italy from corruption, totally unrealistic. So Machiavelli, as I said, sometimes was, more than one time, was wrong. But he was wrong when he was suggesting political ideas that were too high, at least for the Italians.
So Machiavelli, when he erred on the side of being idealistic, just the opposite of the stereotype.
Oh, sorry, he was idealistic. And if you, his friends who were real realists, for instance, the acknowledged master of political realism, Messer Francesco Guicciardini, wrote of Machiavelli that he was too keen to have too inventive, fantasioso, imaginative, too imaginative political solutions. That's why Machiavelli is to me so attractive. He tried to be a realist, but he had the mind of a poet.
You're listening to Philosophy Talk. We're talking about Machiavelli with Maurizio Viroli, author of Redeeming the Prince, the meaning of Machiavelli's masterpiece.
And Machiavelli's ideas, are Machiavelli's ideas still relevant in the world of politics today? Which politicians are Machiavellian in the true sense of the word, and which are not?
From the Prince to the President, when Philosophy Talk continues.
Often people get the power by using Machiavellian methods. But what does that mean exactly? I'm John Perry. This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm Ken Taylor. Our guest is Maurizio Viroli from Princeton University, author of Redeeming the Prince, the meaning of Machiavelli's masterpiece. And we've got a caller on the line, Martin from San Francisco. Welcome to Philosophy Talk, Martin.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Martin. What's your comment or question?
Oh, hi. Okay. I would like to get either answer or a comment to this question. Is it the Western style democracy, if it's working, right? Working Western style democracy. I don't know whether we're there yet or not, but is that the Western style democracy seem to be in direct contradiction or conflict with the Machiavellian teachings, you know, our check and balances, free press and all that stuff? I will take the comment of the end.
Okay, that's an interesting question. What do you think, Maurizio?
I think that Western-style democracy and in particular the principle of checks and balances is a principle that can be traced in Machiavelli's works, particularly in the Discourses on Livy, where he outlines and explains and recommends as the best form of government what he calls governo misto, mixed government, in which there are three elements, the monarchical element, the aristocratic element, and the republican element, and each component must check and balance the other components. So the monarchical element should be restrained by the Great Council, and the Senate should be restrained by the President or the lifetime of Falconer. We normally associate the theory of the checks and balances with the 18th century political thought, but in fact, the most remote roots of this idea, which is vital in our democratic polities, can be traced back to Machiavelli, at least to Machiavelli, if not to classical antiquity, in particular to the works of Polybius in the sixth book his histories.
Maurizio, so a lot of people would say, I think wrongly, well, Machiavelli had sort of two political theories, the political theories of the about the republics and political theory for princes and monarchies, and they're kind of inconsistent, and people worry about that. But I was actually struck in rereading The Prince in preparation for the show, because I was thinking about asking you about that, but there's a part where he's talking about the monarchy in France and why it's a good model for a monarch, because one of the things the prince should not do is get the nobles upset, right? He shouldn't get them upset, but they got to control them. They can't let them run rampant, but they got to control them. And in France, he said, they had this parliament, and the parliament deals with the nobles, and it kind of intervenes between the people and the nobles, and that's a really good thing, because the prince doesn't have to stir up the nobles and doesn't have to... You know, and I thought, well, that's really clever. I mean, so I think his political thought is much more nuanced than a sort of common reception gives it credit for. What do you think about that?
First of all, allow me to clarify the first issue that you have raised. I don't think there are two Machiavellis, the Republican and the Monarchical, because if you read The Prince, there is not a single line about the successor or how to transfer the power of the prince to the successor, how you inherit the political power. It's not about establishing a monarchy, The Prince. It's about a redeemer. It's about a mythical figure capable of emancipating Italy.
Well, let me just interject one thing just so you can clarify. Sure, well, he does talk about all kinds of different ways a prince can come to be a prince by inheriting a state, by a prince by crime, a prince who puts down an insurrection and becomes the prince, a prince by luck who's just given. And he thinks all these different princes are in different situations and have a different set of problems. So there is at least that, right? About how you come to be a prince.
Sure. Because Machiavelli explains to you the various types of principalities. About hereditary principalities, he spends one line. He doesn't even discuss them. Now, what is interesting is to compare Machiavelli's prince with hundreds or at least a fair number of books on the same subject written in the same period, and they were all addressing the problem of how to establish the principles of hereditary rule. And Machiavelli is silent about that. What I think we should focus on to understand Machiavelli's message is the last chapter, where he explains his myth of the Redeemer, and he lists who are the heroes or the people that the prince should try to imitate. And there are three. One is Moses, the other is Theseus, and the other is Cyrus. These are the examples that Machiavelli lists. And Machiavelli is working and writing under the assumption that human beings tend to imitate great examples. These are the examples he indicates, not of monarchs who have been in power for a long time. He has also an important discussion on monarchies in the Discourses on Livy, in which he explains, basically, to sum up his point, which in fact I am translating it literally from Italian, is that the government of the people is preferable to the government of princes. Book 1, chapter 58.
So I've got a very timely question that's come in over the internet from Laura in San Francisco. What would Machiavelli think about the independence referendum in Scotland? Did the no vote mean that Scotland is unredeemed or redeemed?
It's about the Scottish people to decide. They have decided that they don't feel oppressed or so dramatically oppressed under the British. And the British in the United Kingdom have decided to stay within the United Kingdom. Is that simple? On this issue, I would like to say that for Machiavelli, if you really want to emancipate yourself from foreign domination, you must be serious. Namely, you must be prepared to fight for it. I don't see the Scots being willing to put up a fight against.
I want to ask you, Maurizio, one last question.
Good whiskey over there.
Maurizio, I want to ask you one last question about that comes from the more common reception of Machiavelli, because there is this thing. You talk about Abraham Lincoln and Franklin Roosevelt and Moses, but here's the thing that one does get when reading The Prince. The great leader sometimes cannot be constrained by what he thinks are real considerations of, like, objective morality. Like, if I'm the leader and I say, okay, what morality forbids, I will never do. then that's the potential for disaster. What morality forbids, I may reluctantly do, but I sometimes have to do what morality forbids. And that's one of the things that makes it uncomfortable. We don't want our leaders just to take the interpretation of what morality requires and doesn't require into their own hands.
Do you prefer, John, a leader who is unable to use fraud or to lie or even to perpetrate cruelty, even if that inability to lie and to use fraud and to use cruelty costs the independence, the liberty, and the peace of your country? Are you prepared to say that?
I know that's a tough thing. That's where Machiavelli gets you to, right? But suppose the leader merely thinks, abrogates unto himself, unchecked that judgment, and merely thinks that I have to lie, cheat, steal here. Right, because that's what our leaders do all the time. They think they have to do the hard, dirty work that the people don't have the stomach for. And here's another thing Machiavelli, the Prince, is about, although it's not the text, it's kind of the subtext. He says an awful lot about human beings and human nature and what the mass of people are like, and it's not a pretty picture. So if the leader thinks, the masses are this, that, and the other thing, and I have to, it seems to me that I'm not sure what checks the leader in that way of thinking.
Well, I think that it's wise to assume that human beings are malignant, are fraudulent, are selfish, as arrogant, are ambitious, they are deceitful. That's what they are. Or maybe I am a little bit, affected by the fact that I've been living many years in Italy. But
you said that, not us.
No, I say that, and I can say it loudly. In fact, notice that Machiavelli, in the Discourses on Livy, has a wonderful line that when he writes that because of the Church of Rome, we Italians have become senza religione cattivi, without religion and wicked. So Machiavelli has this image of his fellow Italian citizen. But what I think the political relevant issue here is that you cannot assume that human beings are good. It's highly unwise to do that. In politics, human beings are good. Politics brings about the worst part of human beings. And it is extremely unwise to assume that they are not weak, they are not ambitious. If you really want to do great things in politics, and I stress it for Machiavelli, what really gives you glory is a politics of emancipation. That's what a politics of redemption. The word redentore, redeemer, is the word that he likes most. If you really want to achieve, you must be prepared. That's what Machiavelli says, to enter in evil, which means not to stay forever in evil.
So,
as
Maurizio,
I have explained many times to my Italian political leaders, don't get Machiavelli as someone who is allowing you to do whatever you want.
So, Maurizio, I have a question for you, probably the last one we have here. If Machiavelli could be resuscitated, brought to life, and put in the Oval Office to advise Obama, taking into account that Americans maybe are a bit nicer than Italians, but still need a strong leader, what advice do you think Machiavelli would have for our beloved Prince Barack Obama?
I think, first of all, if Niccolò could be resuscitated from his grave in Santa Croce, where I stop by every morning to begin my day in the right manner, I would love to have dinner with him. It would be so much fun. I really would love to. That's my dream. But in the Oval Office, first he would shake Barack Obama's hands, and he would congratulate him on two issues. First, because he has been able to pull out from Iraq, that is an absurd war, an unjust war, fought unjustly for no good reason whatsoever, prepared with useless lies from many American political leaders that caused disgrace and embarrassment for Americans all over the world. That's not the way to serve your country. But You would have also praised our President Barack Obama, because as I remember correctly, in the first campaign, 2008, Barack Obama has been able to generate in the American people and the young people, I've seen it in Princeton, a sense of hope, of civic strength, commitment, integrity, that is exactly what a country like our needs.
So, Maurizio, on that note, I'm going to thank you for joining us. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you. It was great being with you all. It's a pleasure discussing with people like you.
Our guest has been Maurizio Veroli. He's a professor of politics from Princeton University. He joined us today from Florence, Italy. He's author of Redeeming the Prince, The Meaning of Machiavelli's Masterpiece. This conversation continues at Philosopher's Corner at our online community of thinkers, where our motto is Cogito ergo blogo, I think, therefore I blog. And you too can become a partner in that community by visiting our website, philosophytalk.org.
Now, conniving and unscrupulous, but high-minded and idealistic, it's Ian Scholes, the 60-Second Philosopher.
Ian Scholes, Machiavelli's The Prince is part of a literature subgenre called Mirrors for Princes, written for kings starting out on history's path, taking the form of moral instructions, etiquette tips, stirring biographies of leaders gone by, and so forth. The same year The Prince was written, 1516, Erasmus put out a more typical model of the genre, The Education of a Christian Prince. These things were written to reflect the predicted glory of the king and bring glory to the writer. The Prince was written during a period of exile. Machiavelli had been an able diplomat for his native Florence for 14 years, but he was also his own worst enemy, too smart for his own good, as they say. Sending off intemperate letters to the wrong people, abrasive and brash, he was also often in the wrong place at the wrong time. In 1513, two would-be assassins of Giuliano de' Medici made a list of people they wanted to tell about their plans, and Machiavelli was on it. Bad luck. He was jailed for 3 weeks and tortured, but he was able to write funny poems to what he called the magnificent Giuliano, reporting that the lice in his cell were as big as butterflies. Is this how you treat poets? He asked, hoping to amuse Giuliano into letting him go. But Giuliano ignored him. But luckily, he became Pope Leo X, the first Medici pope. In the following general amnesty, Machiavelli was released, but exiled from Florence. He wrote The Prince, hoping to find favor with Pope Leo. There's no evidence the Pope ever read it. Machiavelli dedicated the book to Leo's nephew, Lorenzo, who eventually took charge of Florence. No evidence that he ever read it either. The book was not even published until after Machiavelli died. Since then, Machiavellian has become an adjective, like Kafkaesque, and the essence of The Prince is generally summed up by this sentence from it. He who neglects what is done for what ought to be done sooner affects his ruin than his preservation. If you want to be prince, in other words, morality is a sucker's game. But The Prince was really writing down the obvious. Why would an actual prince need to read it? Italy at that time was run by incredibly ruthless people with very short attention spans. City-states at odds with each other, run by families also at odds with each other, like the Borgias and the Medicis. Also, there's a revolution brewing in the church, thanks to Martin Luther, ongoing brief wars with France, Spain, Germany, the Holy Roman Empire, alliances, betrayals, promises, lies. In 1527, it came to a head. Yet another Medici had become pope, which caused a lot of Machiavellian intrigue, leading to another damn little war. The emperor's army had just won a big battle with France. But the emperor hadn't paid them. Angry, starving, they mutinied and marched on Rome. The general was killed, and they ran amok, robbing, raping, murdering for days. Chaos, anarchy, and nary a prince in sight. Good times. Today, Machiavelli is cited either to criticize a ruthless failed leader or praise a ruthless winner. Putin comes to mind. I'm not sure if any politicians actually read The Prince, though. They only read books if they can find their names in the index. Not even then. Is there relevance? After all, we have the WWJD bracelets. Nobody actually does what Jesus did. Nobody asks what would Machiavelli do, because everybody knows what Machiavelli would do. He'd get a job as Mr. Spock, Iago, or Karl Rove. He'd whisper to the prince, kill them all, then blame somebody else. Oh, and when this mess blows over, please get me a job as a lobbyist. Thank you, sir. Thank you. I gotta go.
Philosophy Talk is a presentation of Ben Minella Productions and the trustees of Leland Stanford Junior University, copyright 2014.
Our executive producer is David Demarest.
The program is produced by Devin Strolovich. Laura McGuire is our director of research. Dave Millar is our director of marketing.
Thanks also to Chris Hoff, Merle Kessler, Carola Kreitmeier, Jimmy Tobin, Jill Covington, and Mark Stone.
Support for Philosophy Talk comes from various groups at Stanford University and the partners at our online community of thinkers.
And from the members of KALW San Francisco, where our program originates.
The views expressed or misexpressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of Stanford University or of our other funders.
Not even when they're true and reasonable.
The conversation continues on our website, philosophytalk.org, where you too can become a partner in our community of thinkers.
I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking.
Yankee Swap is like Machiavelli meets Christmas.